It's Dr. Philip E. Stieg, PhD, MD. I'm the professor and chairman of the Department of Neurological Surgery and Weill Cornell Brain and Spine Center at Weill Cornell Medicine, New York Presbyterian Hospital.
Dr. Stieg, we're talking today about subdural hematomas. Let's begin by describing what they are and what causes them.
There are two types of subdural hematomas. First of all, what are they? It's the result usually of a ruptured blood vessel over the surface of the brain. And there's a layer over the brain called the dura. It's a fibrous band that exists between the brain and the skull. So if a vessel is torn, most commonly a vein, it results in the acute deposition of blood along the surface of the brain. Hence, it is called a subdural hematoma or a subdural blood clot. Then there are two types of subdurals. There's the acute subdural and a chronic subdural. And what we're going to be talking about today is the management of chronic subdurals.
And what causes a chronic subdural?
It's always related to some type of trauma. What's interesting about it is, again, chronic subdurals are more common in the elderly population, and with the aging of the baby boomers, we anticipate that this is going to become a much more common problem. But it can be something as simple as a very aggressive sneeze. It can be a bump on the head counter. I had one patient where they bumped their head on the door when they were getting out of their automobile. Or it can be from most commonly from a fall, which is, again, more common in the elderly population.
Do many people suffer from this?
It's becoming a more common problem. And when we think about the incidence, it occurs in up to 5 per 100,000 people. And again, as we said, we think that it's going to be a much more acute problem as the population ages. I would say that a subpopulation in the age group of 15 to 35, the most common cause of death and disability is motor vehicle accidents, and that's usually the result of severe head trauma, i.e. the acute subdural, which again is a different problem and requires different therapies.
What would be the symptoms, Dr. Stieg, of a subdural hematoma?
Commonly, it will be that a patient presents with a slight alteration in their affect. They just feel a little bit off. They have headaches. They don't feel as sharp. And then if it is enlarging, then depending upon the side of the brain. So if it's on the right-hand side of the brain, the patient would notice possibly some weakness on the left side of their body. When they're walking, they kind of tilt to the left-hand side or they frequently fall to the left. If it's on the left side of the brain, it would affect the right side of the body, meaning they would fall that way. And they could also have speech problems. And uncommonly, but it can occur, a patient could have a seizure.
At Weill Cornell Medicine Brain and Spine Center, you've developed a new way there to treat subdural hematomas. Tell us about this new treatment, if you would.
Yeah, we're really excited about this. Dr. Jared Knottman had this novel idea about how to treat chronic subdurals. And as we said, these chronic subdurals, they're not an acute problem. The patient presents with progressive symptoms. And the one other thing I didn't mention is, as a result of the bleeding, the brain and surrounding tissue forms a kind of a membrane that is an inflammatory reaction, and it secretes a fluid. Looks like motor oil, actually. Yeah. And the treatment is aimed at eliminating that. And so what Dr. Knottman has devised is a minimally invasive way of treating this, meaning we make a small little puncture site in the groin, feed a little rubber tube up into the artery called the middle meningeal artery that feeds these membranes, and we put particles in it to basically plug up the vessel, thereby eliminating the ability of these membranes to secrete their fluid. And we found that it's above 90%, about 92% successful in the treatment of this disorder.
And is it long-lasting, the way you treat it that way?
It is long-lasting. And again, the advantage is that this is different than the standard way we've treated this for the past 70 years, which would be we'd have to make an incision in the scalp, we'd have to make a hole in the skull. We would drain the fluid out. We would leave a drain in. The patient would have to remain flat in bed for 3 days. So clearly it's much less invasive, and the patient can get back to their normal activities much more rapidly.
Do you think that's going to be the standard treatment?
We're hopeful. I mean, let's face it. We've done it on 60 patients. We are now looking at trying to do this either with industry support or doing it with federal funding, say through the NIH. There are a number of other individuals that have now read the papers that Dr. Notman has published on this topic, and there's growing interest in it. Like anything else, we'd like to do a large trial by multiple institutions to demonstrate that it's effective, and then I would think it will become the standard of care.
Does this procedure have a name yet, or are you waiting until you're further along with it?
Well, it's specifically called middle meningeal artery embolization, and it falls under the category of things that are treated by minimally invasive endovascular surgeons. So by endovascular means people that work inside the blood vessels.
Mm-hmm. If one of your family members would be suffering from symptoms of a subdural hematoma, what should you do?
They should seek medical attention immediately. The first test that they would get either by their doctor or in an emergency room would be a CAT scan, where it would be diagnostic for this. And then depending upon the severity of the subdural, these are measured by thickness. So they can be a millimeter thick or they could be several centimeters thick. And the effect that that has on pressing on the brain, what we call mass effect. So we try to measure what's the clinical picture with what's the radiographic picture. And then there's a treatment algorithm where if it's not severe, we might just watch it. Or we would put the patient on a temporary dose of steroids. If it's more severe, we are now starting to use the middle meningeal artery embolization up front versus going in and operating and draining the fluid. But again, that depends upon the patient's symptoms. If they, if they're weak on one side of the body, we're going to drain the fluid.
This is fascinating. Anything about this that I didn't ask you about specifically or you would like to mention?
The one thing I'd like to add is that the risks associated with doing this procedure are minimal. It's very safe. Before we put the catheters in, we can make sure that the blood vessels don't have plaque and things like that in them, which could cause other types of medical problems. There have been virtually zero complications as a result of doing this. Unless one would say that the 8% of patients that didn't respond is considered a complication. But even in the surgical population, we find that the fluid can reaccumulate in up to 15% of the patients. So we feel strongly that this is going to become a very popular, non-invasive way of treating this disease.
The name of the doctor who developed this, what is it again?
It's Dr. Jared Notman, K-N-O-P-M-A-N.